Zara Larsson, I Would Like on Phoenix FM. Very sudden song which catches
you caught me by surprise
catches
people. There, saying how excited I am.
It was done
about this
incredibly
play.
Deliberately. Now, their back catalogue ranges from Irvine Welsh's Trainspotting to the romantic comedy The Lady Killers, along with classics by the likes of George Orwell, Charles Dickens, and Lewis Carroll. And next week, for the first time, they're turning their talents to the greatest playwright of them all. They are Early Doors Productions, from where we're joined by Matt Jones, Darren Matthews, and Amy Clayton. Good morning to you guys.
Morning.
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 Hello.
Morning.
Billy Shakespeare. It's coming. How exciting.
Nobody would have guessed that, would they? Billy Shakespeare. You're first name terms with him.
Oh, yeah. We're good friends. We're really good friends. We had to have a very serious chat about what I wanted to do with this show. He was cool with it, so...
Now, anybody who knows you knows that you will always like to sort of stretch boundaries and bring new surprises. And Shakespeare doesn't get... I don't know if traditional is quite the right word, but I guess it probably is that normally when you perform Shakespeare, it's very much to the, the authentic... script.
A lot of people do go for the traditional... I mean, it's just ageless. The language is so, so beautiful and... We're using plot lines for modern day dramas, i.e. Game of Thrones, EastEnders. We're still stealing that stuff from his ideas. And that stood the test of time for over 400 years.
Because basically people
insane.
Don't change and
exactly.
challenges
and what's
don't
amazing
change.
About Shakespeare is that you really can put any spin on it because of the age of it and because the plot lines are so modern, if you choose to look at them that way. You can do anything. You can keep it traditional or you can work your way through the ages. So, we've definitely put this one... bang up to date.
So just step back a moment. Why Shakespeare?
I think there's a broad perception that it is the epitome of quality of theatre, arguably correctly or incorrectly. It depends on your take. Now, I have always loved the language, but I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. I'm the sort of person who goes to watch Shakespeare, nods politely when other people are, and then if people start laughing, oh yeah, it's hilarious. But there are moments...
I do that with all of your productions.
But there are moments in the script when you actually analyse them and you think, oh, I get this, I really do get this. And when you start pulling it apart, it's so clever. The way it's all phrased and the rhythm to it, it's just beautiful. And we wanted to... show that we can, for want of a better word. I mean, it's not something we would normally choose, as you know, but why the hell not? I've got some very, very talented people in my pool of actors, as you know. Some of them have done Shakespeare before, some of them are complete novices, and I wanted to give them the opportunity to do one in a very, very different way.
We haven't actually named the play. Now, it's a play that a lot of performers, a lot of actors are a little bit shy about naming.
Oh, we can say it.
We can say it, can we?
Macbeth.
It's Macbeth. I'm just going to read what is on your flyer, actually, because I think this is a great synopsis. The infamous gang lord Macbeth hears a drunken prophecy from a trio of street women that one day he will become king of his drugs ring. Consumed by ambition and spurred to action by his alcoholic wife, Macbeth murders the current kingpin and takes the London city throne for himself. But guilt, drug abuse and paranoia send him spiralling towards a dismal end. So you can very much recognise the plot line, but in terms of the setting, it's somewhat different to...
Very much so.
The original.
Very much so. We've been very true to the language, however it has been slashed considerably. I wanted it to be a Shakespeare that was accessible to everybody, not just those people that love Shakespeare, the people that like me that want to enjoy it, but sometimes there's just elements where you go, I'm a little bit lost here, I don't understand the language as well as I should, and this has been stripped to the bare minimum. It's like, here's the plot, here's the story, here are the goodies, here are the baddies. Cheer for who you wish.
Now let's bring in Matt and Darren, two of your finest performers. Matt, you're playing Duncan, who's the victim of the
I am, yes,
the evil plot, the central the central victim.
Yeah, indeed, to start with, at least. I won't divulge how many victims there potentially are throughout the whole play.
You're the first.
I am the first, and yes. Duncan does meet his end. But, what a great character to play. you know, he's not in it for long, but he, when he is in it, he's, it's great, meaty, very good to tackle.
Mm. Is, really it, obviously it's a, it's quite a violent plot line. How do you portray that?
Well, okay,
with rigor.
yeah, because traditionally, when you go, when you see a lot of traditional productions of the play, Duncan is this very nice nobleman, where in our production, maybe not so much. So the way I'm portraying him is, you know, true to the story we have created for him. But yeah, he's not the most likable of people. So I need to try and get people on his side, but also, you know, be true to the character that we've created. So,
so is it a case of, on the one hand, as you say, trying to get people on his side, but on the other hand, portraying that, that perhaps people don't want to be on his side?
Well, absolutely. You need to give people that choice, you know, to decide what they make of that certain character. You know, traditionally, everyone likes to have done. They've liked to make him really likable. So when he's killed, everyone's like, boo, against the people that have done it. But the plot narrative we've chosen is more complex than that. It's more subtle, and it, it gives people a chance to really, you know, make their own minds up. Mm. We don't want to lead them too much. Give them the opportunity to think about it and make, yeah, their own decisions.
I think my initial thought was The Godfather, for example. It deals with that element of where you shouldn't be supporting anybody. Yeah. Everybody's, yeah, bad in it, but when something terrible happens to the Corleones, all of a sudden it's like, oh, quick, get the other guys, but they're all bad. What they do is bad, and what we're projecting is that this environment breeds hostility. It's not a pleasant environment, so who you choose to root for depends on your point of view.
So you're giving the audience a choice, almost.
Certainly are.
That's very, very clever. Mm. Darren, you're the best buddy of the
guy. Oh, best,
I am, yeah.
It's so cute, little, yeah, romance going on.
I know, we're never far apart from each other.
Bangro. Because we don't have Macbeth himself here, which I'm rather pleased about, because I was going to be watching my back this morning.
He's a bit scary. He's a bit scary, yeah. And gets increasingly so as the play develops, yes.
So, your character, again, what are you portraying to the audience?
It's a lot about... there's a lot of stuff in there about trust and friendship and where ambition takes you. Banquo is Macbeth's friend from youth. They've been together for a long time. They've fought many battles together, both in the original version and in this. They've been through a lot of things together, through their rise, through Duncan's gang. And he, Banquo, has the position of watching his very close friend going out of control. And what does he choose to do about that? Does he stand by and watch it happen? Does he try and stop it? Does he get away? Or is he, unfortunately, influenced by some of those things himself? We say a lot of things about, you know, Macbeth's ambition is the ruin of him. I think you could say the same for Banquo. Banquo's own ambitions can get the worst of him as well.
What I'm getting from this is that basically the overarching message you're putting on is that human nature fundamentally doesn't change. Mm. Is that a fair...
That's a very fair judgment.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But don't... aren't we getting better, really? Aren't we evolving?
Really?
Did you sweep around? Every time there's a little bit of hope on the news, it's always dashed the next day.
Fair comment.
Think we are. I always... one of the books I read as a child, Lord of the Flies, as I'm sure we've all read, yeah, it's a very interesting concept. But I still think to this day, if we didn't have society telling us what's right and what's wrong, we're base animal evil people. We really are. Mm. We do horrible things to each other. What's frustrating is we also do wonderful things to each other. There's moments, if I watch a music concert, for example, I think it's 5,000 people, they're all enjoying a moment. Why can't we hold hands and do that around the world? But unfortunately, that's not how the world's made. It's terribly sad, terribly sad.
And actually, that's something you want to portray through a lot of your productions, isn't it? Sometimes it's pure entertainment and it's just go and have a good time. But quite a few of the things you've done, actually, have been along that same sort of theme, is really sort of delving into
sometimes
human
psyche.
Yeah,
I do like people to go away and have a little think. I mean, occasionally we just need a popcorn show. Let's sit back and have a laugh. That's always good. But for two reasons. One, you want to keep your audience entertained and show them different things. And also, you want to keep stretching your actors. And if they get the ability to just go on stage for the week and have a laugh, Wicked, and other times if they can go on and really pour something of their personality and their influence from society into it, then equally, what joy.
Naomi, what's your take on this? Because you were saying off air that that you are actually a lover of Shakespeare. So are you sort of aghast that they can come along?
No, I think
and
it sounds
this?
It sounds great. I remember this is one of my favourite, probably my favourite of all Shakespeare plays, and I studied it at secondary school, so it's always had kind of a really dear place in my heart, because it was kind of the time when I was really sort of learning and exploring Shakespeare, so it really came at a really good time. And I think, as you've said, one of the really good things about it, about Shakespeare, is it kind of resonates whenever you look at it. Like, this is about, you know, tragedy, because characters have brought about their own demise through their own, you know, character faults, and that goes on all the time, unfortunately. And it's
absolutely,
yeah, I think it's really great as well when it's, you know, we make it more accessible and it's brought up today in the modern age, and you really do see how this stuff, yeah, means something today as much as it did when he wrote it, I'm sure.
Well, I'm pleased that you are giving it the thumbs up there as well. It does sound absolutely brilliant. Look, want to hear a little bit more about it. Also, some of your future plans, because you've got some rather exciting plans coming up, including a comedy thriller from the 1930s, I think it was, which originally starred, the film starred, Bob Hope. So looking forward to finding about that.
Phoenix FM.
It's Early Doors Productions. It's Darren Matthews, Matt Jones and Amy Clayton from Early Doors talking about Macbeth.
Yes, the Scottish play, although yours isn't set in Scotland, is it?
No.
it's probably the thing people would be most upset about, I imagine.
Where is it set instead?
London.
Excellent. Good. Bit of local stuff.
Bit of local, that's it.
I had a question. We were chatting about it before, about you have a role in this, but you also direct, and what that's like.
A nightmare. No, it's a nightmare. That's what it is. As I was saying to you before, if I can help it, I prefer not to be in my own productions, because it is very difficult. Fortunately, with this, the part that I've taken on, Lady Macduff, because nobody wanted it. Outrageous. She's a great part. It's one scene. It's not conversational. So it's something that I can plot in my head myself, I can work out, and I'm not, everything I do doesn't affect the whole cast in its entirety. So in this particular occasion, it hasn't been too bad. Previous occasions where you're involved quite a bit, I have to rely on my guys to be very understanding. The lines are thrown from the front, so I can still watch it and still make notes, and they have to just imagine that I'm there, and I normally step in at the last minute and they forget that I fit into a space slightly bigger than what they've allowed for me, and that sort of thing. It's not ideal, but we work it. How is it for you guys?
Yeah, it always works really well. And it's that, and as you say, it's just this one key scene. It's the one key scene that's going to steal the entire show. Is normally the experience we've had. But for the first time this week, had a little audience in to watch our run through. And indeed, that scene got a huge amount of response for our small audience, which you probably didn't notice because you're too busy, you know, in the moment. But
yeah,
it's always impressive
this
stuff.
This is just to solidify his next part.
Yeah,
you know
I'm
right?
Definitely getting cast again.
No,
please.
This is true.
He is fishing.
Because you normally perform at the Cramphorn, don't you, in Chelmsford?
Yeah.
But
we
you
do.
Moved to a
we
different
have.
Venue, going to the Isle of Dogs.
We wanted to go closer to London earlier, a couple of years ago.
Right.
Ideally, train spotting. We really wanted to take train spotting there. But there were, I think we explained to you at the time, there were two rights you had to pay for with train spotting. You had to pay the film people and the actual writers, and it was so expensive. And if you moved it to London, it was treble the price.
Oh, really?
Which was not in our budget, unfortunately, which was a bit of a shame. So we've been looking for the right sort of thing to take there, and I know Shakespeare doesn't lend itself well in London, so we were looking around for somewhere quirky, and we ended up finding The Space, which is an old converted church on the Isle of Dogs, and thought, yeah, this is the one. So we're going there, and they've been fab. It's run by three people, and they've been extremely helpful, and I'm very excited about it.
Great. Now, just going back to this whole thing, Naomi there referred to the Scottish play and sort of with trepidation named the play. But you've not got this thing about the, you know, the superstition around
no,
it.
No, I haven't. Do you know where the superstition come from? You might.
That was my next question.
What you're gonna ask?
I was going to ask you, where does the superstition come from, Amy?
Back in the day, So if you were performing in a theatre, another production, and that production wasn't going well, wasn't selling tickets, or it was getting bad reviews, what they would do is they would take your show off and put Macbeth on in its place, because it was very easy to put on. So the reason it's bad luck is because if you were in a production and you heard the name Macbeth being mentioned, your show was probably going to get cut. So it's quite unfair to actually Macbeth, who isn't unlucky at all. So I say it with pride, and I do not spin around three times and spit over my left shoulder. No.
That's brilliant. I had a look at that, actually. I think it was on Wikipedia, which is, you know, it's got to be absolutely true. This is attributed to Michael York. A way of dispelling the curse is to immediately leave the building that the stage is in with the person who uttered the name, walk around the building three times, spit over their left shoulders and say an obscenity. I quite like that bit. And then wait to be invited back into the building.
Yeah, we're keeping the obscenity and we're getting rid of everything else.
We can do that bit. The spitting and the turning we've cut.
So, Matt, you won't be doing any of that stuff. What about the language from an actor's point of view? I mean, Amy was saying that the language is, you know, it is absolutely beautiful and in many respects timeless. But from an actor's point of view, that surely has got to give an additional challenge, hasn't it?
It certainly does, yeah. But what I found when performing Shakespeare in the past is it can actually help also your understanding. The rhythm that he's put to this wonderful language can help you learn the language and get into your character. It gives you a flow because, you know, he thought a lot, it seems, about each different character and how they, like their rhythms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can learn a lot about your character if you explore those rhythms in the language. So, you know, I used that.
So that is actually quite, whilst the language is a challenge, in some ways it's helpful to you as a performer.
Absolutely, absolutely. The challenge for a lot of people is understanding, yes, of course, what does this set of words mean, literally, but to help you learn it and put it together is sometimes using that rhythm is really, really helpful. But the language, of course, is a challenge, and that is one of our biggest challenges, is to give the audience or put it in a context for the audience that will help them to understand what we're trying to tell them.
You know?
And I think bringing it up to date is actually very beneficial for an audience that hasn't experienced Shakespeare before, especially because if you take the context out, like put it fresh, something that they know and understand, they don't have to worry about computing that. So all they're doing now is trying to understand what is being said. Mm-hmm. So it's that focus really helps.
Very, very clever. Mm. Very clever. And Darren, this is what, three months since your last production?
Less than
3 months. Two months.
I mean, signalled from the side, it's 2 months.
Which you had quite a major role.
I had a lovely role in Heaven Can Wait. Yes, I played Mr. Jordan. Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you actually cope with that? You're doing, what is it? Is it three this year? You did three last year.
Yes, it's very busy. It means you have to be quite dedicated to saying to yourself, okay, while I've learnt my lines for this particular show, and we're still rehearsing, we haven't done it yet, but as I've learnt those lines, I need to start learning the lines for the next one, so that you can go into the next set of rehearsals already in that space. And I don't know, the show seems to be getting closer and closer together. I have been warned in...
Just got an evil look on her face, Ms. Director there.
I mean, unfortunately, I can't do the next Early Doors production, which is killing me, having done so many in a row now. But I have been warned in advance that the one after that that I am hoping to be in is an even shorter rehearsal period than this one has been. So I think I need to start preparing for that now.
Amy, the next one, you quite often do things that were films, and I think I mentioned that this one is going to be a film from the 1930s.
That's right, yeah, the remake actually, but it's the one most people know. It's The Cat and the Canary, 1939, Bob Hope. Was quite a blueprint for a lot of the thrillers that followed, actually. I don't know if you know the story, but there's an eccentric old guy who's dying, and he's invited his whole family to his estate, which is quite secluded. Once you're on it, you can't really get off of the estate for one reason or another. And it's on the 10th anniversary of his death, in the idea that his will will be read and they will determine the next heir. However, there's a streak of madness that runs through the family, and should that person be determined mad or disappear, i.e. be killed off, then there's a next heir, and obviously that's quite a motivation for the next heir to kill. So it's a murder mystery. It's very, very funny though, and we thought that would be a challenge. Let's do that.
You do like a big challenge, don't you? And then, as Darren was saying, you've got an even bigger challenge coming up, because then literally, what,
4 weeks later? Literally later. 4 weeks later, Jekyll and Hyde. I know, we were given the opportunity to use Ingatestone Hall again, which we really wanted to. And that were the only dates they had, so I thought, why not? Let's push our guys again, see what we're actually capable of.
And then it's Christmas. And then you're going to be starting all over again.
Yeah, when I have a little break. I will have a little break, Alan. I'm just not sure when.
You love it, don't you? And the audiences love it as well. I know that from personal experience, that whatever you do, you really do put something of your own stamp onto it, you guys. And you are just so professional. So it's an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Alan.
Especially as the fact that you're on next week.
I know.
You look so relaxed. And I don't know how you're so chilled about the whole thing.
Oh, we had
a great
run on Thursday, didn't we? It was great.
Brilliant. Do just remind us where it is.
It's at the Space on the Isle of Dogs. The box office number is 0207 515 7799. You can book them online, or you can go to our website, which is www.earlydoors.org, and there'll be a link straight to the online booking system at the Space also.
Brilliant. Thank you for joining us, and come back and see us again soon.
We will do. Thanks, Alan.